All right. So as mentioned, my name's Ann Greeny. I go by Annie G on Twitter. And today I'm going to be talking about some lessons that we learned at StumbleUpon about content marketing. So first, a little bit about me. So I started my career in the entertainment industry. I worked at Paramount, working with some of the biggest brands and celebrities, as well as movies, partnering them together. Moved over to PlayStation because I wanted to get into technology, and I wanted to get to the Bay Area, and then caught the startup bug. And since then, I've been working in the mobile startup space. Now I work for StumbleUpon. So StumbleUpon is a discovery platform. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your favorite interests, and we take the 60 trillion web pages and serve you what's best. So we personalize the web. We make the internet just for you. And every number of stumbles is a sponsored stumble. So we have a native advertising network built in. What this means is that we work with the biggest brands and the biggest publishers, and we constantly are seeing what content's working and what's not for different demographics. The big thing that I have been focusing on, too, at StumbleUpon, we're about 70% millennial and about 10% Gen Z. So this is important to me because this is where I focus the majority of our data and how to reach this demographic. So 62907, does anyone know what this means? This was the launch of the iPhone. Steve Jobs said, "Your life in your pocket." He stood up there in front of all of us and held up this phone. And for the tech nerds in the room, like myself, we sat there very excited to get this new toy, this new piece of technology. We had no idea how this was going to not only change our lives, but change the way that we market. Now, the thing about the iPhone is the iPhone launched, it didn't even launch with an app store. It was basically an iPod with a phone attached to it. So we really didn't know the capabilities of it. Soon after the app store launched, after that Android launched, stiffer competition, and it's been progressing ever since. And because of this, mobile has become the new standard, especially with the millennial audience, and now even more so with Gen Z. Mobile is what we need to think first in reaching these users. What we like to say is 6 is the new 60. That 6-inch phone is just as important, if not more so, than a 60-inch screen, especially for millennials and Gen Z. So over a billion smartphones sold in 2015, 245 million users in the US alone. The iPhone and mobile and smartphone market is huge and only growing. Millennials and Gen Zs are mobile first. And so when I was consulting, I'd go to a lot of startups and tech companies, and I'd tell them, mobile first, we have to be mobile first. Oh, yeah, we're optimized for mobile, we get it. No. Mobile first. If you're trying to reach these generations, you have to go and build mobile first for your content, for your applications, all of that. And they're on multiple devices. So it was just the iPhone, and then it was the tablet, then it's the phablet, now it's the watch, and soon it's going to be VR. So millennials and Gen Z are consuming mobile on all different screen sizes. And they have this continuous partial attention. As many of you know, with a mobile phone, you're constantly logging on. You're constantly consuming content. This doesn't mean that we always have, you know, this lesser engagement, but there is. You have to realize that when you're creating content, when you're trying to connect with users, you have to realize that you always kind of have their partial attention. And mobile videos account for 66% of mobile traffic. What this shows us, and this is only growing, for many of you who had smartphones in Gen 1, Gen 2, video was miserable. You'd sit there and you'd try to play a video and it was just the spinning wheel of death. And that has shifted. Wi-Fi's gotten stronger, networks are stronger, platforms are stronger, OS is stronger, and phones are now able to show videos. We can stream TV shows, movies. In my United flight here, it was like I could screen every TV show and movie that I wanted. Like, this is incredible. This has only happened in the last couple years. So the death of the banner ad, and are millennials and mobile causing this? So a lot of companies that I talk to don't really like hearing this because they focus on banner ads and they've built, you know, they've built programmatic tools that are just about putting banner ads out there and banner ad distribution. But we've seen a shift, and as marketers, we have to realize what's happening here. Prices are increased, engagement's decreased. Why is this? Well, in a mobile ad, banner ads don't work. We all see banner ads on mobile. And yes, sometimes, you know, they are targeted right. I don't know, maybe 1 in 1,000. The majority of times, it's some obnoxious little teeny banner or, you know, 300 by 250 was shrunk down to a 6-inch phone, ends up being so tiny and so small that it's almost near impossible to read what the value proposition is and get much out of it. The majority of clicks on banner ads are actually accidental. Up to 50%. Users also don't want to be pulled out of apps. So when you're consuming content, especially within applications, we all know this. You sit there and you're consuming and you hit a, you know, maybe someone, you, it says click now, so I click now. And I, you know, I went off to another experience, I got pulled out of the application. If I want to go back, I have to go back in. Apple's tried to make this easier. Facebook and other social networks are really the only ones that have nailed try to keeping you into the product. But the majority of banner ads shoot you right on out. This is cumbersome, and users do not like this. And with the metric of success being a click, with an eyeball, an impression, what is that prone for? What are we prone to do? We're prone to create clickbait. You scroll at the bottom of almost every publisher, and what do you see? We see these weird ads with googly eyes promising the world. It's full of clickbait. So yes, you can get cheap clicks, but are you really getting great users? And ad blocking. Ad blocking continues to grow. It grew 41% in the last 12 months. Everyone who listens every time Tim Cook now speaks, you know that ad blocking is continuing to grow and will grow even more and more. So what is the answer? Where are the opportunities for marketers? And this is what we're seeing on Stumble. Mobile content is king. You know, a couple years ago they were telling us, oh, content's not the king, it's not the, you know, it's programmatic, it's all about programmatic. Well, mobile content is king, and it's coming back to reign. But the quality of content has changed. Before it was, you know, if you were creating content, you had to create this high production value type content. You had to create these TV ads, the expectations were high. Well, we've had a shift. High production value doesn't equal virality. And mobile is the new standard. So what we've come into is what we call like a DIY network and a DIY economy. That's do it yourself. Before, you know, you had to hire a production crew to create content. You hire that production crew, they cost a lot of money, then you have to distribute. This was a nuisance. Now you can create content on your phone. You can edit it on your phone. You can do everything with the tools that are probably in your pocket. Web development has become for everyone. There isn't this huge hurdle that if I want to create a landing page, I need to hire a whole team of developers. You can actually do it yourself. You can create a WordPress page, you can create a Tumblr feed, buy a domain, they walk you through the steps. Content creation is now for everyone. And there's a new generation of enablers. We're seeing this more and more, and this is becoming incredibly popular in the last 2 years. These new experts in mobile content aren't who you think they are. We've seen this rise of the internet star. Before, if you were an internet star, you were Kim Kardashian, and you really couldn't, or you didn't want to tell your mom what you did to become an internet star. That's shifted, and now these internet stars are taking over really this marketing influencer world. So does anyone know who this is? This kid's name is Nash Gere. He's about 20 years old now, but he started when he was about 16. He's from North Carolina. He doesn't sing, doesn't dance. Was one of the first, you know, really big advocates of Vine when Vine launched, and he's got a great Twitter following. This kid makes, well, maybe he's not a kid if he's 20, but this guy makes $4,000 to $6,000 per second on Vine videos for some of the biggest brands in the space. We're talking Coca-Cola, we're talking Procter & Gamble. They're all reaching out to this kid. And again, he's not famous. He doesn't have famous parents. He doesn't have some amazing talent. His talent was he jumped on to Vine in its early stages. He built an audience. He was a popular high school kid. He grew his following, his community, and he created Vine videos in an authentic manner. And now he's making, you know, up to $100,000 a pop on Vine, Instagram, and Twitter deals. And this is growing. This isn't just Nash. This is growing on Snapchat, on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. There's an entire agency that's just devoted to talent for internet stars. And what does this mean? It doesn't mean go hire Nash for your deal. It means that now anyone can create content. Anyone can learn from people like this. And yeah, it's kind of weird to troll some 17-year-old kid's site and see what all the girls are saying. But at the same time, one of the things that I learned was this guy engages with every fan. Yeah, not always the trolls, but he's engaging with fans. He's replying back. It's two-way communication, and it's in an authentic voice. And millennials and Gen Z are responding to this. So the rise of native. So native advertising has taken a lot of forms throughout the years. Native advertising started way back when you would, you know, it was just about having a product in its organic space. One of the biggest things that we have seen in the last couple years has been the rise of sponsored content. Sponsored content, we used to think of as advertorials. You'd be flipping through the newspaper, or you flip through a magazine, and all of a sudden there'd be this crazy ad that would promise you the world and telling you to buy now, and you'd be like, what, I don't understand, this doesn't, and you, oh, it's sponsored advertisement at the top. You still see those from time to time, and you kind of roll your eyes. It's a nuisance. That was sponsored and advertorials of the past. They were aggressive, they were blunt, and their whole goal was to sell. Sell, sell, sell. To be honest, they reminded me a lot of banner ads. The whole goal is to click, to sell. So we've seen a shift, though. So at StumbleUpon, we're indexing all of the content of the web. And in addition to that, we're working with publishers to amplify and distribute. And because of that, we're seeing all of these different types of content. And we see more and more publishers have jumped into this space of sponsored. So what are they doing? It's a new breed of advertorials, so much so that they don't actually want to be called advertorials, they're called sponsored content. Their goal is to inform, to entertain. They're editorial in style, an engagement as opposed to just clicks and as opposed to just sell. And what we're seeing is this content is amazing. And who's doing it? What publishers? So BuzzFeed was one of the first ones in this space. And then we saw New York Times, and they were coming to us with these similar type deals, and we kind of took notice. Well, what's happened in the last 6 months, maybe even a year, is everyone's jumping in over every vertical. You know, you can buy sponsored content on The Onion, then you can go over and buy stuff on CNET. You can buy it all over the space. And they're not necessarily cheap. It ranges anywhere from, I've seen deals as low as 10 grand to deals as upwards of 100K. So a lot of big brands are jumping in right now. But again, this is the early space of sponsored. And again, the content that they are creating is so good. I continue to see it come across because all of these people are using StumbleUpon for distribution. So I continue to see this come across, and I'm like, I don't even notice what this content is. I don't notice that it's sponsored. And this is really important, because what this is getting to is one of the key facts why sponsored content is such a big trend and will be continue to be a trend for the next year or 2 years, which in the tech industry is an incredibly long time. The reason is because millennials don't care if the content is sponsored. They just care if it's good. And so we see this from a data perspective. When we're looking at user data, we're seeing how they respond to regular content, from, say, publisher, let's say, Funny or Die. Funny or Die has been working with us for years. So they create amazing content, and people see it, and they respond, and they engage in a manner. What we're seeing is millennials see Funny or Die's sponsored content, and they engage with it just the same. Yes, it's sponsored by Ford. They don't care. The content is still really good, because the goal for Funny or Die is not to create, their goal is not to create a complete advertisement, sell for Ford or whoever the brand is, but their goal is to create engaging content to connect Ford to their users. And that's the metric of success. And that's really a shift in thinking. So let's look at some sponsored content samples. This is some stuff that we saw coming through Stumble. You know, again, from The Onion to The Atlantic to SB Nation, which is sports, they did a great video content with Nike. This was engaging, compelling. It wasn't hitting you over the head, but it was making you think about Nike in a different way. Esquire magazine with Ford. Now, they do use banner ads. They use them as a complement. And they use retargeting, and they use it as a complement. But as you're reading these different publications, and as you're reading these different pieces of sponsored content, you really are thinking of the brand differently. And when we look back, especially for the millennial generation, we think about pieces of sponsored content that we've engaged with and where this has come from. Red Bull is one of the best examples, and they've worked with us for years. Red Bull creates amazing content. And the thing about Red Bull's content, they're creating it for themselves. Now granted, they have a great vertical and a great niche to create content, but the thing about it, we don't care that the content has Red Bull's logo all over it. No, you just care that the guy's doing a flip on his bike. And it's not shoving, go drink a Red Bull down your face, but the brand is there. And similar with GoPro. Their stock might be in a world of hurt right now, but regardless, they've created an amazing brand. And they create amazing content around that. And they've created this community of content builders. And Patagonia being another one, you want to engage with these brands because they create such amazing content that gives you so much. So is BuzzFeed the new agency? Agencies usually don't like too much when I say this, but BuzzFeed has done things different. They were one of the first in the space. And here's what they did. So BuzzFeed went out and hired, BuzzFeed was already popular, especially with the millennial audience. They went out and hired some of the best creatives. And they were hiring those creatives to build from agencies to build content for brands. And that's one thing. But what they were doing different was that they were also doing the media buys. So BuzzFeed was buying media off of different social networks to amplify. So they were doing the creative creation, just like an agency does creative, and then they were also doing the media buy. And they were selling these deals to the biggest brands in the space, and they still are. And they're coupling those together to create these massive, huge deals. And just, anyone who has read anything about the valuation of BuzzFeed, they're just printing cash. This is the reason why other publishers have taken note. And this is the reason why we're walking towards more and more towards sponsored content. So why did they turn to those different brands? And granted, we have some kind of insider baseball on the fact that we were one of the brands that they turned to. Well, there's a social advantage. And it has to do with using social native as amplification. So again, when we talk about native, we talk about, sponsored content being one of them. A lot of people don't realize your Facebook feed is full of native advertising. And what did Facebook do? Well, they were freemium for brands, whether Zuck and the rest of them knew it when they built it, but they created these brand pages. I was pretty early on in Facebook for a brand, and we had a profile page when I was at Sony, and we had to shift that back to a brand page. And I remember thinking, why are they making us do this? It's so cumbersome. And the reality is, once the brand pages started building up, as many of you know on using brand pages for for clients or for yourself, there's a whole wealth of free content that you can use, analytics. There's a whole, there's a number of ways to get a ton of free organic traffic with Facebook. It was the mecca, especially like three years ago. But we all have to remember with Facebook and with many social channels, it's rented versus owned space. It's not your website. You're renting it from Facebook. You might not be paying a monthly fee yet. That could happen, I guess. But they own it. And we've all felt those pains of Facebook going, oh yeah, we're gonna just squeeze that channel that you used to, that pipeline that you used to send to your users. And this is not a negative thing. I own Facebook stock, so I'm pretty happy with it. But in anyone who watched their earnings these, this last month, they're crushing. And the reason is because they've created this freemium product for brands. Come get some. We're giving like, this opportunity away. But then we're also going to make you pay to get more in line and get more users. And their product that they've made the majority of their money off of is boosted posts. And that really is native advertising. It lives in your feed. It feels like regular posts. Maybe it looks a little bit different, says sponsored. This is social native, and it's social native at its best. And so BuzzFeed and other publishers, other content producers, what we're seeing, everyone uses Facebook. We use Facebook. We get a tremendous amount from it. Twitter, promoted tweets, doesn't quite work as well. Promoted pins, Tumblr, there's a ton of opportunities to do this. It lives in its natural environment. It works, it connects to the right users. You can do high targeting. And the key is, it's mobile first. Social media has always been mobile first. Well, not always, so in the early days it wasn't, but Facebook jumped on the mobile bandwagon far before anyone else. That could probably be disputed, but they were pretty early on and they created an amazing mobile product. And they focus now on mobile. Same with Twitter. StumbleUpon, we shifted all of our efforts to being mobile first, not optimizing for mobile, being mobile first. So when you do distribution through these channels, you are being mobile first and messaging your content via mobile. And so one of the other things is good content reduces the price. We know this for those of us who spend on Facebook. If your content that you put out there is meh, it can be very expensive. If it's really good, the price drops. That CPC, or cost per engagement, however you're buying, gets lower and lower. Well, what does that do? As content producers and distributors, it makes us create better content. I don't want to put a crappy ad out there because I know I'm going to be paying an arm and a leg. I want to put better content out there because the better my content is, the cheaper the price is going to be. And social native is outperforming display. This is an important thing that we're starting to see more and more of. And so here's some examples. The top one being what a boosted post looks like in Facebook. This is a piece of sponsored content from Bustle in the StumbleUpon frame. It feels natural. It doesn't feel like an ad, and the content is still good, so it gets those KPIs that marketers are looking for. So as I was saying, native ads were viewed 53% more than banner ads. And this is on top of the fact that we know that people are accidentally clicking on mobile banner ads. The majority of people are accidentally clicking on mobile banner ads. So if you want an engaged user, if you want a user that's just not coming over via clickbait or just not coming over for superficial reasons, you need to give before you take. Before you sell, before you push that sales message, that CTA down their throat, give them something, engage with them, create an experience. Now look, this is just looking at social native dollars and how much they have grown. So Business Insider did this report. Anyone who's interested in native, I think it does actually cost something, but it is worthwhile. They go incredibly in depth in the last couple years on native, and there's a ton of knowledge there. But the key thing here is look at where social on social native, where it's been, where it's going, what those projections are. Almost $12 billion for just social native by 2018. That is huge. And native in general, that is an incredible amount of money. So in addition to native advertising, one of the things that we found in putting content out there is email. So I've done email for the last 5 years. And I remember when I kind of accidentally got into email marketing because no one else wanted to do it. And I worked at an e-commerce startup, and it was 75% of our, basically all the money we made came in Q4. And all of a sudden, we didn't have an email marketer. So as I was learning it, I ended up becoming somewhat of an expert in the space. And at about that time, everyone was saying, well, email's dead. Every startup I talk to, email's dead. Don't worry about email. It's all going to be push notification. Well, newsflash 2016, email is not dead, not even close. We need to rethink email. What's dead is possibly desktop email to millennials and Gen Z. What's alive and kicking is mobile emails. Email is an incredible content distribution solution. And I'm going to go into in a little bit just some of our learnings directly in rebuilding the email program at Stumble. People check their emails at least once a day. When you're talking about trying to connect with someone, when you're talking about getting in front of the right people, people are opening emails. You can articulate a lot in an email compared to a banner ad. Email marketing is still one of the most affordable channels. Email marketing coupled with social is one of the most powerful things you can do to reach, connect, and retain your users. 4,300% return on investment. If you're doing email right, if you negotiate your contracts correctly with ESPs, that's email service provider, you can get incredibly cheap rates, an incredibly affordable way to get your content out to the right users. Over 50% of millennials open email on mobile. So this is only growing. And so again, email's not dead. Desktop might be dying, but mobile email is going to be one of the hottest things that we'll see in the next few years. And that is a very, very small graph that you can't read. And what it says, all you need to know is the red line is emails that are millennials that open their email on mobile compared to desktop. So it's growing. It's an important, important fact. So new mobile strategy. So when I came into StumbleUpon a couple years ago, we had an email program. And what we were doing is we had a fully automated, very programmatic, every buzzword you can imagine. Our algorithm was sending off emails that were personalized to each and every user, and it still does, and we've done some tweaks there. But we didn't have an email marketer. We didn't have a head of marketing. And so when I saw the program, I kind of took it apart and evaluated it. And a couple of things that I noticed were the fact that our emails weren't optimized for mobile. So we optimized them for mobile. We increased the open rate by 12%, click-through rate by 8%. We created a welcome series. If you're not doing this on email, it's an absolute must. Not just one welcome email. You have to do somewhat of a drip campaign. You send them one email to welcome them, and people think that, oh, well, this new user I just sent a welcome email to now knows just as much as the user has been around for years. No, you got to treat them different. You don't just walk someone into a classroom and expect, on day one, they're going to be assimilated like everyone else. Send them follow-up email. Don't be a nuisance, but every week. Give them some tutorials. There's so much you can do to help the onboarding process of a new product via email. So give these users special treatment. What this did for us is it increased in-app engagement. Huge metric for us on the mobile side. And then we built editorial content emails. And again, so the emails of the past were built by an algorithm. They were picking pieces of content from the web personalized for each and every user. Cool idea. But when I stepped back, I realized, okay, these are good. Metrics are good. But when you look at content, when you're taking in content, when you're judging entertainment, which is basically what content consumption is, it's entertainment in some facet, does a computer do it better or does a human? Content and entertainment is always tied to emotion. And what I thought is, like, I put the gamble that a human could decipher whether something is entertaining or not based off of emotion more than a computer. Turns out I was right. Our content emails that go out to over 1 million users get over 50% open rate and over 11% click-through. Anyone who's done email knows, you know, it's usually you get about a 15% open, and the standard is, benchmark is about 2 to 3% click-through. So all of a sudden, we were one of the biggest drivers of return users. And one of the biggest drivers of, and also led into opportunities for monetization. This is huge. So again, with this millennial audience, email is not dead. Opportunities are still there. You just have to rethink how these users and who these users are and how they're consuming content. So a couple tips for mobile emails. Watch the length of the subject line. Keep it short. You're opening on a phone. Single column layout works best. Don't try to jam things together because, again, it's on a 6-inch device mostly. Make the copy short and to the point. There shouldn't be a ton of copy in there. Again, it's hard to read, and you've got a generation that is, it's not ADD, it's just short on time, so to speak. No tiny fonts. Pre-header text, which is the first text that auto-populates, is incredibly important. If you do not have this, you're missing a great opportunity to upsell and to increase your open rate. HTML for the majority of text. So a lot of people have images turned off. If you have images turned off, all you see is a big blank email. So HTML, any copy that's in HTML will show up, and you can use that to upsell and hopefully get someone to turn their images on. And test for all devices. You can use companies like Litmus. That we use them. They do a tremendous job for being able to test how it's going to look on an Android device. Not just one Android device. There's about 10 of them that are still out there. How it's going to look on all the different iPhones, on phablets, tablets, and everything else. Here's some examples of some of the stuff we did. Our Stumble email. Sephora is, I think, best in breed on email programs. Incredibly personalized. They do just a great job. So a couple takeaways really quick. Millennials and Gen Z are mobile first. Mobile banner ads just don't work. Creating mobile content is distribution in mind. You can create the best content out there, but remember, you're competing with 60 trillion web pages. It is the most cluttered space when it comes to content that we've ever seen. So you need to think about how you're going to distribute. Whether it's through your own personal channels organically, through your own audience, through email, through social, or through paid methods as well. Shift that focus from impressions and eyeballs to engagement and experiences. You'll get way more out of your fans, you'll build fans, and what you will see when you step back in a year or so is you will see those metrics of success start to blossom in different ways. And support your content through the social ecosystem to amplify. Social remains the strongest, easiest way to amplify content. And there's a ton of ways to use it. And think beyond like the Facebook and Twitter. There's now a ton of social apps. Think about messengers. That's a whole nother realm of growing opportunity. And you have to stay upfront, and you have to continue to start trying new things. Because like I said, in 2 years, 5 years, 6 months, VR will be the next big thing. And we don't know exactly how that's going to work out, but there's a lot of opportunities that are still going to be there. And email is, again, a powerful way to amplify content. So mobile-first content, native amplification, and email guaranteed will dominate 2016. So if you want to build these strategies, you need to figure out how to incorporate them all in. And this is what we've seen at StumbleUpon and have seen to lead us to tremendous success. Thank you all for having me. I think we have time for a question.
We have about 5 minutes for questions.
They Daily Skim, for any of those, for anyone who hasn't checked it out, is an incredible company. And they started very small, and they did email different. They're email only, which is such a crazy thing. So in a world where everyone's saying, email's dying, no, they took a huge risk. And they focused on mobile email. And they do a great job, their algorithm's great, and they have a great editorial team that spans across the nation, or maybe even the world at this point. But yes, absolutely agree. I think for content, there's so many ways to distribute and to consume, and totally agree they do a great job.
Hi, with regard to BuzzFeed as the new agency, as an ex-agency, yeah, we hate to hear that, but as now brand side, I think that's brilliant. any thoughts on Facebook Creative Shop, which is a team of about 130 people that they've built up over time that are kind of function as a proxy for an agency, kind of guiding brands through how to make better Facebook content, et cetera. Any experience there? Is it worth working with them versus working with someone like BuzzFeed directly?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on what your goals are. What are your metrics of success? Who's that audience you're trying to reach? When it comes to creating content, context is key. What that means is if your audience is a millennial and your audience is, you know, in that span of 18 to 35, somewhere in there, and they are on BuzzFeed, then yeah, BuzzFeed does make a lot of sense. BuzzFeed is also very expensive. So in addition to that, there's also, you know, publishers. I'm a big fan of publishers. I do think Facebook's Creative Shop, I've worked with them, and I think they're good. It's not their core competency. I think they've hired some best in breed, but when you take a tech company and you have these kind of side projects, we'll see how it pans out. Hasn't always worked for Facebook or Google, for that matter. But there are companies, and look for companies that have been doing this content in general well for years. And now they're focusing on creating that content for brands. And they have the most amazing writers. They create engaging content, and they know how to distribute. So, and I also wouldn't look past, now you can create your own content. So if you don't have that big budget, you don't want to work with a publisher, or that isn't feasible at this time, you can create videos. I worked with I talked to a CMO at a Fortune 500 company, and he said the most engaging video that they had last year was off of Vine. They produced TV commercials. They put hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. They said a Vine video that they took of the CEO coming off stage, giving a quick 6 seconds, was real, authentic, and it was the most engaging piece of content they created in the whole year. Cost them nothing except maybe an intern's time. So think about engaging, think about creating your own content, because we're in that space right now where the barrier to entry is incredibly low.
All right, we have time for one more question before we move on to our next session. Any more? All right, let's give Anne a round of applause.
Thank you.